All right. When it comes to these stories, it's important for us to recognize a few things. One, while there are absolutely people in India and around the world that like view these stories as historical, like they happened, they're real, even if they didn't happen on Earth, they happened up in the ether somewhere, and like one story is the right story and other stories are the wrong story. There are 100% people like that around the world and in India. Our tradition is not those people. These stories are what we could call myth, not as in not true, myth as in metaphor. We are speaking in symbols to help us understand ourselves better, which means there are a number of different versions of these stories. Neither one of them is right or wrong. None of them are right or wrong. And oftentimes for a lot of these stories, there's many variations of the stories as there are people telling them. The point is, what is it that you're trying to communicate? The details of the story will help to mirror the message that is being shared. What is the story pointing to? In the context of deity yoga, the stories in some way are pointing back to the self through a particular avenue. Another very important detail, though, is to recognize that every character, you are every character in these stories. So we are, let's see, how many dudes we got in the room? One, two, three, four, five. Five dudes in the room, rest ladies. It's not like we're the male characters and they're the female characters. And like, oh, she's the goddess, I'm a goddess, I identify with her, yes. And like, oh, there's the man. You are every character in these stories. You are the monkey, you are the man, you are the woman, you are the tree, you are all of it. So, those little preface there for these stories. The story of Ganesha's birth happens, as they do, long time ago, far, far away, up in the Himalayas somewhere. Shiva and Parvati, the god and goddess, were living up in Mount Kailash. They were somewhat, in terms of the grand space of time, recently married. But Shiva was known as, like, the wandering yogi. He was the bachelor. He was the ascetic. Like, the world and women could not conquer him or woo him because he was separate from it all. He was so profoundly detached from life that he was off meditating for most of the time. So even after he did decide to marry Parvati, he still had his old character of like, I like to meditate. He used to go off with his buddies, the Gunas, and they'd go off into the mountains for eons and eons, smoke a lot of dope, and just like disappear for a few eons, meditating all the time. Well, at some point, Parvati, his wife, gets a little fed up with this, and she's like, look, guy, I know you're Mr. Independent, but, like, you're married now. I am home alone all the time. I want companionship. That's why we married. And he's like, all right, babe, I totally hear you, and I understand completely, but I already told the boys we'd go away for this eon, and after this time, I promise, I'll come back, and I'll stay home for a while. She's like, okay, fine. And he goes off with his buddies, the Gunas, disappears to go off and, you know, drink bong lassis and smoke a lot of dope up in the mountains and meditate. But Parvati had pretty much had enough. So she decides to make a companion of herself. Now, there are different variations of the stories. My two favorite, one of the more common ones is that she takes sandal paste and wraps it all over her skin and then scrapes it off. And then with that sandal paste that now has her essence on it, she forms it into a little boy, blows life into it, and it comes alive. another sweeter version of the story, perhaps, or sweet version of the story, is that it said that a boy came into creation, came into being from her laughter. So she happened to be laughing one day, and this little boy was manifest from that laughter. But at this point, the boy that is created has no name. He's just a lovely little boy, already magically, let's call it 5 or 7 years old. And he adores his mom. He loves his mom. They're attached at the hip. She finally has the companionship that she's always been longing for, and they have a wonderful relationship together. One day, she decides that she wants to go take a bath. So she tells little Ganesha to guard the entrance of their hut so she can take a bath by herself. Now, anyone that spent any time around like 7-year-old boys, you give them a job, they will take that job freaking seriously. It's like, yes, mom, no one is freaking getting in here. I got you. You're safe. I'll protect you. Don't you worry. She goes inside. Here's the little boy. And this just so happens to be the day that Shiva and all his buddies come home. Now, Shiva's rocking up. It's been a few eons. It's been a while. And he sees this little boy standing in the doorway of his home. He's like, hey, kid, what the hell are you doing there? Get the hell out of the way. And the little boy's like, no, I'm not moving. You move. Shiva's like, what the hell does this kid think he is? And he goes, kid, get the hell out of the way. I'm going inside. And he's like, no, my mom told me not to let anybody in, and I'm not letting you in. Now, Shiva all of a sudden's like, your mom? And he's looking at the boy who's like 7 years old-ish, and he's counting on his fingers how many eons he's been gone. He's like, that ain't my kid. Says the Rudraksha flying across. I hope those were the extra ones. Okay, whew. All of a sudden, whoosh. Yeah. Shiva's thinking like, that can't be my kid. So, he's pretty pissed off. But he's still Shiva, so he's not going to like, you know, hit a kid. So instead, he does what like any alpha male does, and he's like, you go hit the kid. So he has his buddies go up and attack this little boy. But this little boy is the son of the goddess. He's just like filled with Shakti. So he's kicking the crap out of all of Shiva's friends. Shiva realizes, like, oh crap, my buddies are all gonna die. Like, this little kid is gonna like kill them all. So while he's engaged in the battle, he sneaks up behind the little boy with this trident and he chops the kid's head off. Indeed. Little kid's head goes rolling on the floor. Shiva's feeling pretty proud of himself, like, punk, who does he think he is? Walks inside, storming inside, being like, babe, I'm home. All pissed off, thinking that his wife had a kid with somebody else. She comes around the corner, and she's like, oh, honey, you're home. I've missed you so much. It's so great to have you. Did you see your son on the way inside? And Shiva's like, my what now? She's like, yeah, your son. He was outside at the door. He's like, my son. You're saying that boy was my son. He's like, well, yeah, of course it was your son. Who else's son would be? Yeah, he was outside. Didn't you see him? He's like, honey, I have something to tell you. I may have killed our son. Now, she doesn't do the super spiritual thing, which is namaste. Life is just an illusion. It's all good. I'll wake up from this illusion realizing that, like, this was all temporal and none of it existed. She's like, what? She goes fucking ballistic on Shiva, as one would expect if you just found out that your partner murdered your child. So she freaks out on him. She's like, you fix this. Get the hell out of here. Figure it out. So Shiva goes outside. He calls in all his buddies. He calls in Brahma. He calls in Vishnu. He calls in all the other devatas. And he's like, all right. Guys, she's really pissed off. We need to find out a plan. It's like, okay. They come up with the plan. They're going to find the nearest living animal, ask its permission, of course, take its life, and then pass its life essence back to the boy. So they all fan out into the jungle. They come across an elephant. They're like, hey, elephant, we have a proposition for you. We need to kill you, but we're going to take your head and use that life for another child, but don't worry, you'll be reborn in your next life as a saint, So, swaha, all good. And the elephant's like, psh, yeah, bro, sign me up, no problem. So, wacha, they chop off the elephant's head, they take the elephant's head, and they place it on the lifeless body of this boy. Ha! The boy comes back to life. Yay! Everybody's all excited again. Shiva is allowed back in the house again. All is happy in the world. The little boy is rejuvenated. Shiva decides to allow this little boy, who they now give the name of Ganapati, the control of his rabble, of his posse, of his boys, the Gunas. It's like, you are now the leader of the Gunas. Hence, Ganapati. And everybody's all celebrated. Yay. Story over for now. So what does a story about some father murdering his son, you know, have to do with yoga or me and you or anything else? Well, Shiva and Parvati, Shakti, typically will represent both the immanent and the transcendent, right? That which is the energy of the world and that which is beyond it all. It can also represent what we could call the self with the big S and the small s. So like self, Ashton, self, cosmos, Atman. There feels like there is a distance between them. One seems to be longing for the other, wanting the companionship of the other, but feeling like there is a separation there. Oh, one moment we feel together. I just drank 6 cups of ayahuasca. I'm one with the universe. I just hyperventilated and blah, 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 and I've been meditating. I feel so connected to the universe. Shiva and Shakti are together. And then fuck, off it goes again. Lost. What the hell? Well, what gets in between these two? The boy. The boy prevents these two from reuniting again. But what does the boy represent? Well, a common theme in a lot of these stories, when you see a severed head or someone losing their head, it is the removal of the ego. But ego gets a bad rep in a lot of yoga circles, and we're not going to bash the hell out of ego in our tradition. So we can say false identity, what we'll learn about tomorrow, which is mala, right? Translated as impurity, but means like confusion, misidentification. Because I think I am something separate, and I'm caught up in identifying something, there is something in between Shiva and Parvati. We'll call this jnana. J, N with a squiggle, A-N-A. Jnana means knowledge. But what kind of knowledge? The knowledge that thinks, that experiences the world is separate. Me is separate. I'm an Ashton. I know what Ashton likes. Ashton likes cinnamon rolls, tacos. I eat tacos pretty much every single day I'm in Uluwatu. Yay for tacos. I don't like loud noises. I'm a light sleeper. Let's see. I love Brussels sprouts. There's all sorts of things that I like and I don't like, and they make up me. I know this about me. If you come up to me and you say, you don't like Brussels sprouts, I'll be like, yes, I do. You're like, well, yeah, well, you don't like tacos. And I'm like, yes, I do. And I'm certain of that because that's me, and I know it. That's jnana. But that type of knowing, that certainty, that staticness, I am this. I'm not something dynamic that could all of a sudden have shitty tacos and never eat tacos again. I'm not a big drinker. But I did. I was probably like, I want to say 17, 18. I got drunk off tequila. Puked my guts out. Can never drink tequila again. So who knows? Maybe I'll have a bad taco and be like, I will never have tacos again. I don't know. Because it is still a dynamic process. It's not a solid. But me thinking that it is solid, I am this, is jnana. That's Ganapati. That's the boy. What needs to happen? Needs to lose his head. Lose that sense of identity. And it's replaced with what? What's it replaced with? An elephant's head. What do we think an elephant represents? Loyalty, sure. Wisdom, memory. They're known as like smart. Elephants are intelligent. But the type of wisdom here, we're going to call vidya. V-I-D-Y-A. Long A. They both mean knowledge. They both mean wisdom. But vidya, so Sanskrit, like Spanish, I think like French. I'm American, so I only really speak one freaking language anyways. But like, there are a number of languages, in particular the Latin ones, that have like masculine and feminine words, right? In English, we don't. But in like, you know, most of the rest of the world, they do. Sanskrit is also the same. They have masculine and feminine words. Jnana is a masculine encoded word. Vidya is a feminine encoded word. This will come up as we unpack the tradition and the philosophy of the tradition as we go through the Shiva Sutras and otherwise. We say jnanam bandha. That bondage is because of jnana, of incorrect knowledge of the self. But the remedy is vidya. Shuddha vidya, pure knowledge. That's the elephant's head. Once the elephant head is back on the boy, guess what? Shiva and Shakti are together again. So what brings about the dissolution of separation between my small self and the big self, Ashton and the absolute, is the dissolving away of what I think I know to the experience of the wisdom and being that comes from the intimacy with the dynamic process of this moment. That is vidya. I'll give another example of vidya versus jnana. All of you right now, in particular those that are like traveling, the people back where you used to call home think of you as a thing, right? You have a name and they know you, right? In particular, why is like being a teenager such a pain in the ass? Because like the parents are like, we know you, you're a kid. And the kid's like, I'm not a kid anymore, mom. And like, I'm something else. Well, you're all gonna do Ekadasi, doing a meditation teacher training. Maybe you've done some yoga teacher trainings. Maybe you've done some other stuff. You're changed. You went up to Ubud for Pete's sake and ecstatic danced and drank ayahuasca all in one day. You're a different person now. Shit's changed. You're not a noun. You're a verb, damn it. There has been change. Now you're going to go back home to wherever you're from, and people are going to be like, oh, you're different. And some people are going to be like, I dig it. I like it. This is cool. And other people are like, I don't like this. Why have you changed? You used to be cool. I don't like this anymore. What's going on now? Oh my gosh. Blah, blah, blah. It's because they think of you as a jnana. But no one's a jnana. You're a vidya. Right? You're not a thing. You're not your name. You're not your identity. You're what you think of yourself. You're a dynamic process of being that is in a continual state of change. And our capacity to be with that is what brings about true wisdom. That's what we're actually doing in meditation. We talk about meditation from the viewpoint of this tradition. It is not to generate a state that you're not in right now, aka samadhi. Classical yoga. It's about learning how to be with the moment-to-moment reality of what is. Which right now, we're probably not. Because if you're thinking, if you're still listening to me, right, you're like thinking, yeah, I totally agree with this. I'm on board. Great. And we're like thinking about it. Or you're like, I'm fucking hot, tired. When's he going to stop talking? I'm thinking about ice cream, maybe. You said tacos, but that shit's too hot right now. I want something cold like the mind, but blue, 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 blue. Rather than actually experiencing this. And even then, most of us, if we are experiencing this, are experiencing it through the limited range that is this flesh suit that responds to, hey, Ashton. Not as the totality of everything. But what we'll learn through this practice of being with ourselves is the way of relating to everything. So when someone comes in front of you, it's not another. It's myself. Now, if I don't give a shit about the other, then I'm not even listening to them anyways. They could be sharing their life story. I don't give a shit. I'm just waiting for my chance to talk again. But if that's me, if there's connection there, if you cut off the head, now genuine interaction, vidya, learning moment to moment what's happening, what's to be experienced, this is what it's about. It's not about the accomplishment of some spiritual state where you're so transcendent of it all that you're disconnected from all of it. It's a deep, penetrative insight into every moment of being. And meditation is just practice for that. Because it's easier to do it. Like, we're in Bali. For people who have been in Bali a while now, you probably figured out there's fucking construction everywhere. You can meditate with construction going on. It's possible. It's possible. But fuck, it is so much nicer to not have while you're trying to be one with the frickin' universe. In the same way, it's easier to connect with yourself when you're not having to juggle 17 plates, drive through Denpasar, and like do your taxes. So we sit, we get still, we chant a mantra, whatever it may be, because it's easier that way. But not because the point is to get better at doing that. The point is to figure out, how do I do this while driving through Denpasar, doing my taxes, getting triggered by so-and-so, being stressed, tired, blah, 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 being in the super low vibe of fill in the blank of wherever the hell it is. How do I do it in those moments? That's the point. Not to use meditation as like an escape from the complexities of human life. Which, to be clear, is the vast majority of the meditative traditions. Not ours, but most of them are sold originally as the escape from precisely that. They've been rebranded and packaged through corporate Western world as like productivity, mental wellness. And I mean, cool, I'm all down for that. Like, fine. But the context is quite different. Okay. Forget anything about it. Now, interesting fun fact. Well, I won't go down this rabbit hole. But, it's not a fact, but Hanuman. Just character. Anyone familiar with the Ramayana? Yes, no? So it's an Indian epic. It's the story of Rama and Sita. Ravana, the demon, kidnaps Sita, takes her to Lanka. Rama goes searching for her, meets Hanuman. Hanuman helps Rama find Sita, defeat Ravana, and reunite Sita and Rama. Big self, small self. Sita, small self. Rama, big self. What divides them? Ravana. Who's Ravana? He doesn't have just one head like that little boy. He's got 8 frickin' heads. You got to deal with just this bad boy. Imagine having 8 of those to deal with all the time. I said I won't go down the rabbit hole, but I won't go down far towards the rabbit hole. Just a little bit. What ultimately helps defeat Ravana, this sense of self, and reunite Rama and Sita? Hanuman. Hanuman is a symbol of service, and the idea that when you feel disconnected from the self, the solution is service. But the fun part of the story is the way that it connects to the story of Ganesha, because after that story, Shiva's feeling pretty bad about himself. He's like, damn, dude, I was so disconnected from life, I didn't even recognize my own son. I killed him. I want to go into life. I want to serve life. And you know what? My buddy Vishnu, creator god in the triumvirate of the Indian pantheon, is coming into the world for righteousness and dharma to defeat this Ravana guy. I want to go in and serve him because he is that which sustains life. Now, he's having this great idea out loud, and his wife is sitting right next to him and be like, you frickin' putz. You just got home again, and now you're going to leave again. What the hell? That's what got us in this situation to begin with. And he's like, oh, sorry, babe. And this is freaking Shiva. But I got to go. And she's like, fine, but I'm coming with you. And he's like, ooh. you know, babe, I mean, like, I don't think that's such a good idea. You know, like, if I got to take care of you, then how can I really serve Rama? And like, it just kind of cramps my style. And like, you know, I'm already coming as a monkey because like, I ain't got to like have a roof over my house. I got to pay taxes. Like, it's going to be way easier. But like, have a wife? Oof. And she's like, tough shit, I'm coming. But I'll come as your tail. Now, this is significant as well, because in the tantric traditions, we get the imagery of the chakras that didn't exist pre-tantric traditions. But the way most people recognize these chakras as these wheels with inside the body, right? Think of like the image of the chakra, you think of like meditating dude or lady and like chakras. But here in Hanuman, they're on the outside. Because what can a tail do that a spine cannot? Yeah, can do this thing. It can do all kinds of shit. It can hold onto a tree branch. It can swing. It can balance. It's functional. Meaning to say, unlike the vertical model of the chakras, and if you've been around yoga circles long enough, you've probably heard like, these lower ones, they're the bad ones. This one, it's your sense of identity. Gross. Got to get past that. The next one? That's the sex stuff. Got to get past that. Super unspiritual. Next one, power. Don't want power. But once you get here, to the heart, this is where the real yoga begins. Namaste. Love. Yes. Bad chakras, good chakras. Vertical path. This tantric path, which we could call a horizontal path, right? But think of Hanuman's tail. One moment, this chakra that was at the top is now at the bottom. Now it's at the middle. What changes? Its functionality and application in the world. There's no better one than the other. It's about utility. It's about how they're being utilized in the expression of the divine. But we won't go down the Hanuman thing. Just know that there's a battle in India forever between the Vaishnavas and the Shaivites. And all the stories are like, if it's about a Shaivite story, the Vaishnavas are the bad guys. And if it's a Vaishnava story, the Shaivites are the bad guys. So like, the Ramayana is a Vaishnava tale. So Ravana, he's a Shaivite. But they make it cool because Shiva's going to come in and help Rama. So it's all good. So we're not really fighting. We're a Shaiva tradition, just FYI. But we don't need to battle the Vaishnavas, because it's all Shiva. Anywho, that wasn't too down the rabbit hole, I hope. But I think we can get away with Ekadasi at this point, because we have our mantras. So we brought us there. Rest of the stuff with Ganesha, other times. Quick, pee break. Empty your bladders or whatever you need to empty. Come back, please, within like 5. Don't want this thing like coffee time or anything else. Just like go to the restroom and then come back. If you're here, you can like do a backflip, do a handstand, headstand, whatever you need to do. Like, woo, rejuvenate. And then grab your mala beads and we will chant our mula mantra, do our second round of Ekadasi, and then swaha, pulang, Pergi, sauna, whatever. Makan malam. Tidur.
Do you think we should already talk about the signal for the ending?
Yes.